Jetzt spiele ich direkt von der Pressekonferenz am Sonntag zum Abschluss der Documenta ein Interview, also ein nicht ein Interview-Ausschnitt, sondern ein Statement von Aokwe Enwesor zu der postkolonialen Situation hier, die er sozusagen immer noch sieht, gegeben sieht, auch nach der Documenta.
As one singular event, especially if such a history is written from a singular perspective. And they also seem to think, and I think this is something that for me is very sad and perplexing, that historical amnesia is a way to be able to engage with the work of others. I am sorry, and I don't want to rehash any post-colonial talk here, but when I say that Documenta comes out of the notion of what I call the post-colonial constellation, it is in fact to defy and to challenge those people who will submit our historical consciousness to the kind of deep erasure they want to place it under. No, the post-colonial is not an elsewhere. And I think that when you look at the work of Documenta 11, I think that what we've tried to do is to make a project that engages with the complexity of the contemporary moment in which we live. And no amount of erasure, no amount of, you know, historical denial will distance us from the fact that we live in a period different from the period prior to 1945. And we cannot step back into that dark period when people cannot vote because of the color of their skin, when people were held as chattel, where people were held as property. We cannot return back to that period. And for me, it's a challenge. And it's a gauntlet that one is throwing down to all the critics. And I think that my farewell talk is to again insist, finally, that the person you're looking at is not a non-European. I am not a non-Western person. I do not exist as an absence, as a void, as somebody who has no identity. Because I've never heard any of the Europeans mentioned as a non-African, as a way to define their identity. I am not a non-anything. I am from Nigeria. And I'm not a non-white person. So what I'm trying to place before you is it is the same sense of historical amnesia that constantly seeks to define others. And the others in this sense, from my perspective, are 70% of the world as people who exist by their very absence and so on. And therefore, Documenta 11 made its task to produce a project that is set in what I call the field of relations, the relationship to history, the relationship to ideology, and the politics of representation, the politics of subjectivity, to the politics of identity, and to the politics of historical narration. Because it is through this field that we can, in fact, begin to touch on the complexity of what shapes the work of the imagination. And such work cannot be viewed or seen properly from one dimension alone. So we tried very carefully to make an exhibition that is sort of lives beneath the skin of the entire project, like an organism throbbing beneath the membrane that is sort of tightly woven around it. And this, for me, gives a deep sense of pleasure, a deep sense of accomplishment to the project we've realized.
So, hello.
Hello.
Yeah, now on the telephone is Akvir Enveso, and I would like to ask you first, because I think it was really a great suggest, the end of the documenta. Now, and I was at the press conference on Sunday, and I just played now some statements from you you made on this press conference, and it is really interesting that you just mentioned you are sitting there as a Nigerian person. What was the reason for this to say this?
Well, you know, I think that a lot has been made of the fact that Okwie Enweso is a non-European.
Yeah.
And not only just simply the fact that of my person, I think it also pertains to a whole host of other people who may not be of European descent, and the idea that one is described as a non-something, for me, is particularly, you know, perplexing and confounding in light of the fact that to say that one is a non-European obviously presupposes a hierarchical identification that I find quite troubling in the way in which, you know, one's cultural or biological identity is fetishized and so on.
Yeah.
So I thought it was an appropriate way to sort of to conclude and to conclude in a sense that what Document 11 has been about is the recognition of the multiplicity of perspectives, multiplicity of identities, cultural, biological, and otherwise, from which, you know, the vision of the present global moment is has been shaped. So that was really one of the reasons why I thought it would be important to make very clear that one does not proceed into the world from the space of a void, the space of a subordinate, identity, if you will.
Ah, okay. And the multiplicity of identities is one thing, and another is that you are talking about the multitude of Hart and Negri. And Hart and Negri, they have an essay in this first platform band.
Yes.
Democracy, unrealized democracy. So what is the maybe you should explain the relation to these platforms and the last platform.
In relation
to the multitude, because my critic is in this way, multitude is more the new proletarian, and is this not a paradox situation to talk about the new proletarian and make
I'm certainly my invocation of multiplicity in no way is talking about Hart and Negri's notion of the multitude. I mean, I think that the very notion of the multitude that, as conceived by Hart and Negri, is concerned, you know, chiefly with the notion of sovereignty, individual sovereignty.
Yeah.
Somebody like, you know, Foucault will put it on the level of governmentality, or or somebody like, Agamben, you know, will speak about biopolitics, homosexuality, and so on. So
yeah.
I think that this question really needs to be, looked at particularly not from the position of an oppositional or binary oppositional stance in which, the new proletarian, discourse, in a way, is sort of rehashing a centuries old type of division in terms of class formation and so on.
Yeah.
That is not what I'm talking about.
Okay.
The notion of multiplicity I wanted to sort of highlight is that in the fact that, you know, despite the essentialism of certain categorical definition of identity vis-a-vis its negation from the, you know, from the side of the European, identity, that there are, in fact, a multiplicity of ways of being and looking and seeing the world and living in the world, whether it is Indian, and I'm not saying that even in India, then you have to go into the multiplicities within India itself, or Nigeria, you have to go into the multiplicity of the different subject positions from which people speak.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to sort of to grind this down to an essentialism of an identity discourse, but simply to say that from my perspective, the idea, the denomination, or, you know, the denomination non-European is in light of the hegemonic global discourse to which we, you know, many of us are subjected to, is a troubling, you know, fact, because I think it's a kind of empty space without any kind of, you know, possibility to assert the question of individual sovereignty and the question of the specificity of one's, you know, imaginary and also cultural, you know, position.
And do you mean by this empty space this kind of absence of?
Well, precisely, because if one were to be non-European, you know, so what do we make of non-Asians, or who do we make to be non-Africans, and who do we make to be non-American? I think it's, for me, quite tendentious, you know, such. I mean, I think it's more a nature of habit, you know, to say non-European, because, of course, Documenta is in Europe, and, of course, it's, you know, former directors have been, you know, mostly of European origin and so on. And I would prefer to say Mr. Enwe of African origin or Nigerian, rather than to say, you know, because nobody says Harazim and the non-African, you know, curator, or Catherine David, as my, one of my colleagues put it the other day, nobody says Catherine David, the first non-male.
Oh, yeah. it's a problem.
So I think it's not a deep philosophical question for me at all, but just really the paradox of having to live in this gray zone of non-identity.
Yeah. Okay. But is it possible to be orientated at the multitude? If you are making contemporary exhibition, as a exhibition of contemporary art?
Well, you know, certainly I think that the notion of the multitude as conceived by Hunter Negri is a provocative one, and I think that we would do well not to simply toss it aside as another, you know, theoretical fashion that, you know, that comes to totalize and maybe in that sense, you know, inhabits a different, you know, space of hegemonic thought as such. But I think that what Documenta 11 set out to do, and I say this from the very beginning, is really not to make an art exhibition as such, but to make an art exhibition that is, you know, positioned in the framework of a larger or broader discursive domain that allows us to be attentive to the political, cultural, institutional, disciplinary, yeah, mutations that have been part of the, you know, current global climate. And I think if you see what is happening in relation, you know, in relation to the rest of the world, I think that this is more than necessary to recast the discourse of contemporary art, not by an internal logic of its own autonomy, but really to set, you know, to set it against, you know, the grain of the received wisdom that all its, you know, formation isn't only internally coherent and internally realized vis-a-vis the autonomy of the artwork as such. So this is really, you know, from my perspective, a necessity to open up the dimension of the exhibition of Documenta 11 to the dimension of the public, a public that is more, you know, that is fond of multiplicities. No, I don't want to again get back to the to the debate of about the multitude. Let's just simply use the term multiplicity. But you know, a public that's made up of multiplicities and so on, and from there to be able to fashion a critical public sphere, you know, within which a discourse of integrity could be had, and so on, and. I think that when you take a look back at everything that we promised that we were going to do, which we did in fact accomplish,
yeah,
I think, you know, it not only fulfills the original vision of an Obode in terms of documenta, given the fact, obviously, that Obode's documenta was mostly concerned with Europe and the relativization of power that, you know, that comes with its alliance to the United States and so on. But this is, you know, a documenta that operates on a broader, you know, field of relations, and I think this is I'm very pleased with what we've been able to accomplish.
Oh, okay. And I have some question to the about the exhibition, because the prominent places in the Fridericianum, they are just occupied from works from like Hanne Darboven or Onkavara and so on. And how did you make this decision to give them these prominent places?
Well, I think that the main question is, what do we really mean by prominence? Okay, is prominence only from, you know, the in terms of square footage, the amount of real estate that Hanne Darboven occupies?
Yeah.
Or do we really try to, you know, get away from that and be more attentive to the logic of the work itself?
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, we've chosen not to show a fragment of the work, you know, but to show, you know, the fully realized work as such and so on. And I think that it took the number of space that we gave to Hanne Darboven for the work to be shown properly and so on. And, of course, with Onkavara, I think that every exhibition is a discourse. Every exhibition is a set of scenarios. And within those scenarios, you have a number of unfoldings, a number of critical articulations that not only tries to elaborate on what the exhibition project is, but on the ideas that form what that project, you know, intends to enumerate. And I think the you know, the kind of counterpoint between, you know, Onkavara's 1 million years and Hanne Darboven's Contrabasolo, I think it was a beautiful combination. I think this is the task of the curator to make that you know, alive and visible for the public to understand.
Yeah, I thought that maybe the work of Jinka Shonibara should have this should have this place too.
Well, I think that
well,
of course. I mean, I think that we can, you know, debate forever. But I think that one thing that is very important is the non-hierarchical nature of what we've tried to introduce in the exhibition.
Yeah.
I think that the presupposition is that Fridericianum is the high altar of documenta, and I beg to differ, at least for Documenta 11. I think that the views of Documenta 11 is much more dispersed in different, you know, spaces, and we've tried to be very careful in the kind of space we assign artists in order for their work to really play a very critical role, you know, within the larger scheme of the exhibition, and also to retain that which is individual to each particular work. Obviously, Jinka Shonibara's work, yes, of course, it could have been in the rotunda, it could have been in the same place where Onkavara was, and all those sort of things. But I think that Jinka Shonibara's work did not really suffer from, you know, lack of good space. I think it has, it had a very, very good, wonderful space.
Yeah, that's right. It was only a question, because Jinka Shonibara just has this notion of sexuality, like this pictures of the blue flowers, and the blue flower in the romantic dimension is just thematizing as a sexuality too, to get new families or something like this. And this is just a lag in the work of Darboven or Onkavara. It's only, it's just a different dimension, or?
Yes. Well, of course, you know, Darboven and Onkavara, whatever they both exemplify in relation to the immediate historical period of contemporary, you know, art, and that is to say from the 60s, will be put in the category of being dry, obtuse, or obscure in the philosophical system that they take on as part of their work and so on. But I think that the notion that the entire Friedrichianum has to be seen as being centered by these two works, I think is a misunderstanding at best. I think that these two works do not occupy the kind of central place that they've been assigned. Obviously, they are very, very well-known names, and I think that the works, in terms of the spaces they occupy, I admit, is quite visible, but I think this is exactly where it ends. Otherwise, I think, the work does not really function in any kind of hierarchical fashion.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and this work of Schoenivard is just explained as working dealing with creolization, and the third platform was about creolity and creolization. So the question is, what do you understand about this? Because the third platform is not a band is not out now.
Well, it's been edited as we speak, and I think that different critics can reach whatever conclusions they wish with regards to each given artwork and so on. And I would not reduce Yinka's work to a process of creolization as such. I think that the formal questions and the historical questions that are deeply embedded in Yinka's work are very, very obvious, and I think that one has to look a little bit more carefully at a conjunction of all these different positions in the work and the way in which he's continuously elaborated on the figure and sculpture and the tableau vivant mechanism that he always uses to construct a very, very complex narrative of desire, of mischief, of sexuality, of whatever. I think it's all there. But let me just simply point out that creolité has two, creolité and creolization has two dimensions.
Yeah.
They have two dimensions. That creolité sort of speaks to, what I will call the critical theory of, or the literary theory of the Creole language, within the Francophone, Anglophone, Lusophone, and, Hispanophone, countries of the New World, and that if we were to take it from that perspective and then go into what Edouard Glissant says, that the world is in the process of creolization rather than the world is in the process of globalization, I think now what we have in this instance is a way to really to speak about the world, this other world that seems so palpably visible yet so incredibly absent and so on. And I think it's very important that creolité and creolization really looks at the process of globalization from the perspective of that journey out to the world of indenture, to the world of slavery, to the world of Hegel's master slave dialectic and so on. So this is really a platform that is really about the way in which we come to terms with our immediate historical consciousness of about modernity and so on. And it's really about the discourse of mixing. It's the discourse of encounters, forced and otherwise. It's about a discourse of confrontations with different cultural and epistemological paradigms, and how one makes sense of all those issues within the contemporary domain. And I think that these are none of these questions are subordinated, if you will, to any overarching simplified and totalized theme that Documentary 11 has pulled out of his hat of tricks. So what I will say is that this platform helped us to continue on the elaboration of the multiplicities of the dimensions of the global as it's presently being lived.
Okay. I had always the intention that career-realization is something to have an emancipatory strategy to find in this way new kinds of identities like multiplicity and so on. Mm-hmm. And I thought maybe this is really a different strategy to what we understand in the European context as enlightenment. Mm-hmm. And maybe if Hanne Dabrowen's work or something like this is just critic of enlightenment, maybe where's the difference, really?
I want to be careful that you don't begin again to return back to basically stripping, you know, the works and the thinking of the artists of their complexity by imposing on them.
They have all their own complexity.
A systematic reading that seems to, this speaks about their culture.
Yeah.
So where Dabrowen becomes about enlightenment and Onkwara becomes about Zen and, you know,
everybody
becomes about this. I think, you know, I would like to think that there's much more in operation in within the context in which the artists have really worked over the past 30 years. Let me go back to creativity and the notion of an emancipatory discourse, that indeed it is an emancipatory discourse as such. I mean, after all, the authors of the, you know, very controversial book called Éloge de la Créolité, which is in praise of creoleness, Raphael Confiant, Jean Benabé, and Patrick Chamozo, made very clear that they wanted to constitute a dimension, you know, in which it is possible to talk about a kind of kaleidoscopic totality and what they call a non-totalitarian consciousness of a preserved diversity. And to do that, what they've really proposed is what they call an ethics of vigilance as such. And I think that this is something that goes beyond, compartmentalization, that goes beyond, the kind of binary oppositions of pure identities and, hybrid identities. I think that these are all deeply entangled and really speaks very, very strongly to the ways through which the very, context of the new world is really fully imbricated with what the process of enlightenment, if you will, and I don't think that we can get away from that. But, to find new modalities through which to speak about, the kind of post-imperial identities that have come out of these notions.
So it's always the same in the way that there is a paradox situation, maybe in making an exhibition and having this paradox situation of globalization and these new forms, maybe. But there's another work I would like to talk about, because the work of Thomas Hirschhorn. Mm-hmm. I think there, in this way, like he made this Partei monument, which is not a social work.
Mm-hmm.
It's for me, it's just like that there's something like that there something happened like creolization in the way the guys and the people there had always this different forms of organization. Sometimes they were unorganized, sometimes they were really organized. And this was also really interesting to see.
How do you make the conjunction for this disorganization and organization with creolization? How does that manifest itself?
Yeah, maybe in this question of Kassel, if you would see if Kassel had been creolized because of the Documenta.
I understand your
observed
point.
Something like this.
Well, I suppose that Kassel is always, every 5 years that Kassel becomes utterly creolized, I will say, because of the amount of people who make their journey to Kassel, but who in the end think that they have absolutely nothing to do with Kassel. At the same time, so it's a paradox, a paradoxical relationship that the visitors of Documenta have to the city of Kassel. But having said that, I think that Hirschhorn's continuous sculptural elaboration is a very, very interesting one because of the category that he has sort of used, which is a very traditional category, but, you know, at the same time trying to subvert that category of sculpture and, you know, to make a monument, which is to say the space from which all sculptures, you know, seem to come out of, a kind of iconic, you know, rendering of an image of a, you know, that has a heroic dimension, if you will. It's a very, very, you know, classical notion of sculpture. But what Thomas Herschel has done is to make inside this space of sculpture the very fact of the idea of thought as a very important, that what one celebrates is not simply just the individual, but the thought that the individual has produced. And I think that the heterogeneity of Hessian's monument, in a sense, is also to not only conceptualize another kind of sculptural syntax, but also to confound the very language of the monument in all its iconic and heroic stability. And I think this is something that is very, very important and interesting to look at vis-à-vis, you know, Hessian's work. Of course, the very, you know, nature of Bataille's work and how Bataille's work, where, you know, Bataille's idea about excess expenditure, which in itself is a critique of capital accumulation and so on, is a very prescient one, given the place in which given the location of the Bataille monument, and so on. So I think that Hessian has really put together in a very, very, I would say, subversive way, a project that calls into question a number of issues that one would really talk about in the platforms, whether it's with Democracy Unrealized, for example, and it's, you know, continuous elaboration on the idea that there is, you know, a gap between the realization of democracy and what, you know, neoliberalism has, you know, asserts, you know, as the very end of history in the figure of people like, you know, Francis Fukuyama and so on. So I think that, you know, works like Hessian calls all these notions into account.
And would you see some lines between the work of Maria Eichhorn and the work of Thomas Hirschhorn because of the economic structures?
Absolutely, of course. of course.
Yeah.
And of course, that if you take, you know, Eichhorn's, you know, and of course Eichhorn's work is a classical, critique of capital accumulation, or if not a critique, but an observation of its norms and the deformities that is, you know, that are inside, this very, economic, question. After all, Marx's Capital, the subtitle was, a critique of the political economy. And I think that if you look at the work of Eichhorn in relation to Marx, in relation to Max Weber, notion of the, Protestant ethic and so on, and then you look at, Bataille's, study of excess expenditure through, the not American Indian notion of the word escapes me of the potlatch and so on. So this is for me a very, very interesting conjunction, and I think that these are the very, very subtle ways that works in the exhibition elaborate and comment on each other and open up other dimensions of critical address.
Uh-huh. Okay. And the work of something which I did not understand is the work of Ecke Bonk. Because I have sometimes to work with this Grimmsche Wörterbuch to reconstruct really terms and the etymology of some words, and the Grimmsche Wörterbuch is really good for this. And there was no copy possibility.
No copy?
No books to read, really, in this work, in this Grimmsche Wörterbuch. Only this projection.
Projection,
yeah. So, or do you think that there, in this way, how Eckebonk reconstructs or just presents the Grimmsche Wörterbuch as an alphabet, maybe like made his alphabet. You think there are maybe some similarities?
Well, again, what we're dealing with here is a system of signs and so on, and I think that the system of signs and their relationship to language, their relationship to subjectivity, relationship to history, to identity, and so on. After all, you know, the Grimm Brothers, you know, dictionary, it was the first time that such a task was undertaken, you know, in order to define what the, you know, German, you know, language as such is. So in a sense, it sort of predates even the very notion of a unified German identity, if you will. I think that Ecke's project is really quite is quite clear, and the taxonomy of terms and words and what they describe, but the etymology of the words, their usage, their, you know, their cultural and political and social content, you know, their scientific content. I think, you know, it's really a work that, in many ways, you know, encapsulates, you know, the complexity of the grammar that one finds in the entire exhibition as such. So I think, you know, the relationship between Eckebonk and Boabré, and others, I think it's possible to make such a leap, but I think that there still remain very, very precise, clear individual projects and so on.
Yeah, that's right. But is this just, has this something to do with Kassel too, this work of Eckebonk?
No, not at all.
Not at all. Mm. Not because the Grimms were born in Hanau, not in Kassel, yeah.
Well, they began work in the dictionary in Kassel.
Yeah, really?
Mm-hmm.
And then
in the Museum Frisianum, to be exact.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. that's good to know.
And of course, it's very important to know that the work of the photo book continues because they didn't finish it.
Yeah, that's right. It's now starting this work.
It's ongoing.
It's really ongoing.
Yes.
Yeah, and it's really.
And hopefully, will be finished by 2007. Yes.
Okay, we will see. and how would you say you as a curator?
Mm-hmm.
How would you? What is your? How do you think? What do you think about European or German curators? You have always not this international or view on art, I think. Maybe like you present now the Platform 5 with your team, yeah.
Oh, no. I mean,
no?
I don't make that distinction. These are, for me, colleagues.
Yeah.
From whom I've learned a lot and, you know, with whom I hope that we'll continue to, you know, to share our discourses and to, you know, continue to make provocative projects that, you know, allows us to speak to, you know, the wider public to make the case that contemporary art is still a very important, you know, critical tool, you know, with which to address a whole host of questions, you know, within you know, the complex universe in which we live. So, I mean, you know, I have no critique of my German colleagues in that way.
Okay. And we had now the opening of the MMK here in Frankfurt, mm-hmm. Museum of Modern Art, and this Kittelmann,
mm-hmm.
Mr. Kittelmann, mm-hmm. he made a new Ankavara space with a smoke room. Now, you can hear the 1 million year broadcasting and smoke too. But
I'll reserve any commentary since I haven't seen this work or experienced it and so on.
Yeah, but Onkavara and smoking?
I can only speak in the context of Castle.
Yeah.
there was no smoke. It was very clear glass.
Yeah, that's right. So I don't know what that means. And what are your next projects? Do you have an idea or?
Well, not really. I think there are, of course, in a number of projects that I'm beginning to think about, but they're in such infancy that I dare not even begin to speak of them as having any actuality in the immediate future. But there will be projects, definitely. I'm not going to disappear.
Okay.
Yes.
Great. Yeah, thank you very much for the interview, and thanks to your team, and
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks. Okay. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Thanks. Goodbye. Jetzt hören wir noch etwas von der Pressekonferenz am Sonntag.
Solutions. We always manage to make whatever project that Document 11 set out to make in the most professional way as possible. Thank you, Bernd, for this opportunity. There are many other departments, and I would like to single out individuals, and then I would like, if you don't mind, I know it's a long press conference already, but I would really like to read the names of everyone, at least for the ones we need, you know, that we've had since the beginning of the project. Because it's in the names that we begin to see that this project did not spring out of nothing. It's made up by people. I've never worked with anyone with the kind of intellect, sharpness and generosity and energy and personal and selfless support as Angelica Nolat. Angelica is not only the manager of the curatorial section, but has become a very dear friend, somebody with whom I can entrust my very life. And I will say, on the other side, as of the curatorial team, is the oldest person to the team in terms of the temporary team of Document 11, who also is not just a personal friend, but somebody who has made living and working in Kassel in Germany, who introduced me to Germany with such incredible delicacy, with such incredible discretion, as Markus Müller did. Markus Müller paved my way into entering the very difficult domain of engaging with the German public, professional.
Ja, also das waren jetzt noch die Danksagungen an Angelika Nollert, Herrn Leifeld und Markus Müller. Und da folgen noch ganz viele Danksagungen, die ich eigentlich auch sehr spannend finde. Aber wir sind leider am Ende der Sendung und am Mikrofon verabschiedet sich Felicia Herrschaft. Das war jetzt eben eine Sendung zum Abschluss der Documenta, die jetzt am 15. September zu Ende gegangen ist. Und ich bedanke mich nochmal bei Ogwi and Mesor für das Interview und bis bald. Ach ja, genau, am Freitag werde ich dann mit Verena Kuni nochmal wahrscheinlich Teile aus dem Interview spielen und dann kann man von 14 Uhr bis 15 Uhr diesen Freitag, 18. Nee, welcher ist es? 20. 20.09. nochmal da reinhören. Okay, bis dann, ciao. Soul brother, check it out now. The funk soul brother, right about now. The funk soul brother, check it out now. The funk soul brother. You're listening to the post-funk progressive party of the New York metro area's oldest new music radio program. And as promised, we do indeed have some guests in the house tonight. Gentlemen, it's been too long since you've been here. Right about now, the funk soul brother, check it out now, the funk soul.